Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Friday, April 26, 2019. Coming up this hour,
shares of Deutsche Bank slide as the lender cuts its revenue target.
Cloud computing and advertising boost earnings for Amazon.
Shares of Ford surge as profit rebounds.
And Intel tumbles on weakness in its data center business.
President Trump heads to Indianapolis today for the NRA convention, plus former Vice President Biden collects early money for his White House campaign. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Giants at the NFL draft took Duke quarterback Daniel Jones. The Jets with the third pick took Alabama's Quinnen Williams. The Yankee win streak came to an end in Anaheim.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Global stocks are edging lower this morning. We are coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are lower, down 4 points. Dow futures down 46. NASDAQ futures higher, up 5. The DAX in Germany is down 0.1%. CAC in Paris down about the same. And the FTSE 100 down 0.3%. 10-year Treasury up 4/32, yield 2.51%. NYMEX crude oil down 1.3% or 84 cents at $64.37 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.3%, up $4.30 at $12.84.10 an ounce. The euro at 1.1143 against the dollar. The yen 111.66. Nathan.
Karen, we begin with earnings out of Europe, where Deutsche Bank has suffered its ninth straight quarter of revenue contraction. We get the very latest from Bloomberg's Joe Easton.
Deutsche Bank, the big headline this morning. So they've cut their revenue goal just after this collapse of a merger with Commerzbank. So looking at the earnings report, the securities business is once again struggling, which we know is industry-wide. But particularly for Deutsche Bank, their securities trading business appears to be worse than competitors. They're seeing net 1Q revenue down around 9%. So that's quite troubling for the bank.
And investors appear troubled by the results as well. Shares of Deutsche Bank are down 3% in Frankfurt.
Some other big names in Europe are out with earnings this morning. Bloomberg's Ewan Potts joins us live from London with the details. Good morning, Ewan.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. Declining deliveries and rising costs. Those two factors combining to see Daimler, the German owner of Mercedes-Benz cars, report a 16% slump in first quarter profits. Like much of the sector, the carmaker's battling with slowing US and European sales and record spending on electric vehicles. Daimler shares up 0.1%. But a profits beat from British bank RBS. That's been overshadowed, in fact, by a warning that Brexit uncertainty will weigh on the bank's earnings. RBS, the second biggest faller today on Europe's Stock 600, down 4.6%. And another beat from another big pharma company. Surging sales of cancer drugs helping AstraZeneca to surprise on the upside. Despite that, AstraZeneca shares down 0.5%. Live in London, I'm Ewan Potts, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ewan, thank you. Back here in the U.S., Amazon posted profit that blew past estimates. Earnings came in about 50% above projections, thanks to strength in cloud computing and advertising. Scott Galloway is a professor at NYU's Stern School of Business.
I think the expectation qualitatively was total dominance, and their results came in line with their expectations. I would argue we've never seen a company firing on this many cylinders in modern business history. It's a juggernaut.
At the same time, though, revenue growth is expected to slow for Amazon in the current quarter. Right now, Amazon shares are up 1% in early trading.
Shares of Ford Motor are surging after profit came in nearly 70% above estimates. Chief Financial Officer Bob Shanks tells us earnings got a boost from cost cuts and strong demand for pickups.
Our costs were only up a little bit, so we had very, very good leverage. And within that, F-Series was strong. We got positive contributions from the new Ranger and America's best-selling van. The Transit also contributed. So it was broad-based even within North America.
The results have shares of Ford up 7.5% in early trading.
Results for Intel, though, much different story. The chipmaker slashed its forecast, saying its data center group will post a revenue decline for the year. Nico Grant has more from our Bloomberg 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
There's very little good news in this report for Intel. Essentially, the data center business, which is making chips for the servers that help run the modern internet, also computer networks, that business has been sliding.
In Intel says data center customers are tapping the brakes after massive chip orders last year. Shares of Intel are down more than 7% in early trading.
We're getting more details on Uber's IPO plans. Bloomberg News has learned the ride-hailing company's aiming for a valuation of $80 to $90 billion, well below earlier estimates. Bloomberg's Eric Newcomer reports.
Uber wants to set conservative expectations. It's watched Lyft and Pinterest, you know, Pinterest setting below its last private valuation, Lyft trading below its IPO price, and just wants to make sure that it gets the narrative right. And I think would rather take the hits for being very close to its last private round than getting itself in a situation where it has to backtrack later on.
Uber is expected to set terms for its IPO as soon as today, ahead of a roadshow to market this stock to potential investors.
On the economic front, we get the latest reading today on U.S. GDP for the first quarter. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with a preview. Good morning, John.
Yeah, good morning, Nathan. Economists surveyed by Bloomberg expect a lackluster headline GDP. Bloomberg Economics forecasts 1.9% growth. It's likely to show weak consumer spending and a smaller trade deficit, but the tepid growth should not be viewed as setting the tone for the rest of this year. A lengthy government shutdown and smaller than anticipated income tax refunds probably contributed to significant soft patch in the beginning of the year. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. On the trade front, Bloomberg News has learned the White House is considering concessions to China on U.S. drug protections. Tom Orlick has details from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
The Trump administration is considering a concession which could give the U.S. pharma sector less protections in China than it receives currently here in the U.S. I would certainly expect that there would be a heated debate on this particular point. Clearly, it's going to be something of concern to the U.S. pharmaceutical sector.
Meanwhile, Chinese President Xi Jinping is signaling approval of some White House trade demands. In a speech to world leaders in Beijing today, President Xi pledged to address state subsidies, protect intellectual property rights, allow foreign investment in more sectors, and avoid competitive devaluation of the yuan. All four items are issues being addressed in U.S. trade talks with China. And this is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. It's 5:07 on Wall Street. Time to check the latest world and national news. Good Friday morning. Bloomberg's Michael Barr.
Thank you very much, Nathan. In an effort to rally his base, President Trump travels to Indianapolis today to speak at a National Rifle Association convention. Vice President Mike Pence will also speak today before the NRA. The gun rights group spent $30 million to support President Trump's campaign in 2016, according to Open Secrets. President Trump took a swipe at the latest Democratic presidential candidate to enter the race, former Vice President Joe Biden. President Trump appeared last night on Fox News Hannity.
Well, I don't know who it's going to be. Maybe Sanders or maybe Biden. I think that, you know, when you look at Joe, I've known Joe over the years. He's not the brightest light bulb in the group, I don't think, but he has a name that they know.
Biden kicked off his run for the White House with a fundraiser last night in Philadelphia. Next month, the former vice president will attend a Los Angeles fundraiser. Meanwhile, fellow Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders weighed in on Biden.
But this I am confident of, is that at the end of the Democratic primary, whether I win, whether Joe wins, or whether anybody else wins, we're going to see Democrats come together to defeat the most dangerous president in the modern history of this country, which is President Trump.
Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe meets with President Trump in Washington today. Bloomberg's Bob Moon reports.
The Japanese leader is making his White House visit just as trade negotiators for both countries have begun a new round of talks. They're aiming to secure a speedy deal focused on agriculture and autos. The U.S. is pushing to reduce its trade deficit with Japan and gain better access to the Asian nation's agriculture market. For its part, Japan is looking for a concrete promise that it won't be hit by possible U.S. tariffs on auto imports, similar to duties imposed by the Trump administration last year on steel and aluminum on national security grounds. Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
The Trump administration is delaying its bid to expand oil drilling to new U.S. waters until after the 2020 election. According to two people familiar with the matter, it's in response to opposition from coastal Republicans and a court ruling jeopardizing new oil drilling opportunities in Arctic waters. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. It's 5:09 on Wall Street and time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, 15 years ago, the Giants made a draft night trade to get Eli Manning. He's been their quarterback ever since, but he's aging. He's going into the last year of his contract, and last night in Nashville, the Giants drafted his replacement.
With the sixth pick in the 2019 NFL Draft, the New York Giants select Daniel Jones.
At a Duke, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell, it's a controversial pick. Jones was not expected to go that high. A couple of other QBs, certainly Ohio State's Dwayne Haskins, who went 15th to Washington, were projected by most to be better. Jones, now a Giant.
I'm very grateful for the opportunity. I'm thrilled. I think it's a tremendous opportunity to be in New York, to be, you know, representing the Giants and have an opportunity to be part of that team. So I can't wait to get up there and get to work.
Giants had two other first-round picks to Clemson's Dexter Lawrence, Georgia cornerback DeAndre Baker. They made a trade with Seattle to get that pick. The Jets had the third pick, took Alabama defensive lineman Quinnen Williams. Night after the Yankees came from five runs down to win, they blew a four-run lead. Loss to the Angels 11-5. Masahiro Tanaka took the loss. It ends the six-game winning streak. They're in San Francisco tonight. Mets will host the Brewers. Jacob DeGrom back from his barking elbow to make the start. Sad news from the NBA. Hall of Famer John Havlicek has died at 81. He's the Boston Celtics' all-time leading scorer. In the playoffs, San Antonio blew out Denver. They'll play Game 7 tomorrow. Round 2 Stanley Cup playoffs underway. Boston in overtime over Columbus. St. Louis beat Dallas. The Islanders, 10 days after they swept Pittsburgh, finally back on the ice tonight. Game 1 against Carolina. The Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
All right, John, thank you. And as the Milwaukee Bucks get set to take on the Celtics this weekend in the NBA playoffs, we speak with Bucks co-owner and Fortress Investment co-founder Wes Edens. You can catch that conversation on the Bloomberg Business of Sports Show tonight at 8 and tomorrow at 11 a.m. right here on Bloomberg Radio. Or you can subscribe to Bloomberg Business of Sports as a podcast on iTunes or wherever you go to get your podcasts. S&P futures 4 points lower, Dow futures down 49 points, NASDAQ futures up a point. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. It's coming up to 5:12 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by National Realty, NRIA, developers of high-return income-producing properties for investor partners. See them at nria.net.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. futures and European equities are edging lower this morning. Meanwhile, in Asia, stocks posted their third straight losing session after weak economic data out of Japan. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us with details from Singapore. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Karen. Well, data showed industrial production in Japan slumped 4.6% year-on-year in March. Bloomberg Economics thinks the surprise drop probably means the economy contracted in the first quarter. Elsewhere in China, investors continue to book profits in the world's best-performing stock market of 2019. The Shanghai Composite posted a loss of more than 5% over the course of the week to notch up its worst weekly loss since October. The yuan rose, however, after President Xi Jinping pledged against currency depreciation that harms other nations at a Belt and Road Forum in Beijing. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thank you. We are watching this headline crossing the Bloomberg. Renault is said to renew Nissan merger push via a whole company, and we'll have more on that as it becomes available. Right now, S&P futures are lower, down 4 points. Dow futures down 46. NASDAQ futures up 3. The DAX in Germany is down 0.1%. 10-year Treasury up 3/32. Yield 2.51%. Yield on the 2-year 2.30%. NYMEX crude oil is down 1.2% or 78 cents at $64.43 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.3% or $4 to $12.83.70 an ounce. The euro is at 1.1143 against the dollar. The yen at 111.67. And today we are watching for a report on first quarter GDP out at 8:30 a.m. Wall Street time. At 10, it's consumer sentiment from the University of Michigan. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Karen. President Trump travels to Indianapolis today to speak at the National Rifle Association convention. Vice President Pence will also attend. Former Vice President Joe Biden closed out his first day as an official candidate, appearing at a fundraiser in Philadelphia last night. Round one of the NFL draft, quarterback Kyler Murray went number one to the Cardinals. The 49ers picked defensive end Nick Bosa second. Defensive tackle Quinnen Williams went third to the Jets. Defensive end Cleveland Farrell went fourth to the Raiders. The Giants, with the sixth pick, selected quarterback Daniel Jones. QB Dwayne Haskins went to the Redskins in the 15th pick. Round two is tonight. In the NHL playoffs, the Bruins won game one of their series against the Blue Jackets in overtime. In baseball, the Yankees lost. The Red Sox were winners. And Celtics legend John Havlicek has died at age 79. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. 520 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Kit Jukes is our guest this morning, global fixed income strategist at Societe Generale. A morning where futures are kind of tepid this morning. You wonder whether a look at the past will provide a boost to equities. Of course, talking about first quarter GDP print coming out in just a few hours. What's your review?
Yeah, I mean, there is a tendency for us to sort of extrapolate what happens in the first quarter. We've already seen the Korean numbers, which were hit hard by China, and we've seen the Japanese industrial production numbers, which suggest they could be hit quite hard. What we do know is you know, the Atlanta Fed nowcast was diving 4-6 weeks ago and is now recovering quite fast. So I don't know that the first quarter tells us much, that the world was in a bit of a mess in the first quarter, and it looks a little bit better in the second quarter, and we've got to decide, you know, whether the Q2 numbers have legs. So I'm not sure I'm going to learn a lot from the first quarter, but we don't half tend to extrapolate. So if we get an above consensus print, then we'll probably overreact. That's probably the wrong thing to do.
Why is that?
Well, I just, you know, you have a look at the GDP data. The first quarter is probably different from what's happening more broadly, and the data will be revised a lot. So if I got a bad Q1 number, I don't know that that makes an enormous difference. If I get a good Q1 number, what does that tell me? You know, the bigger theme in markets, the reason in a sense that equity prices, for example, are doing well, the bond yields are low, is that the Fed has got the markets back, because until inflation comes back, they're going to keep monetary policy very accommodative, whether the economy accelerates or not. So, you know, the bigger question to me is the earnings cycle rolling over, a corporate profits going to come under pressure, which would probably doom the economic cycle to slowing further from here, irrespective of the Q1, Q2 gyrations. I'm really doubtful I'm going to learn anything about that today. So, you know, if we didn't have the data, we'd probably see, you know, bond yields end the week on a bit of a whimper, and equity prices kind of run out of steam a little bit, and the foreign exchange market be pretty nervous about the sell-offs in some of the emerging market currencies. And that's probably what ought to happen, and we're probably supposed just to ignore the GDP print.
Well, how do you see the earnings season shaping out now that we're close to the end of it here? I mean, did the company sort of set expectations a little lower so that we get a bit of a boost in equities?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not an equity analyst sort of going through data with any great conviction, but it seems to me that you know, we're at the point in the economic cycle when wage growth has picked up a little bit, when interest rate costs had picked up a little bit, and with some of the global headwinds going, where we probably have turned the economic cycle over, and earnings ought to be on a slowing trend, and it's the profit cycle that drives the economic cycle. When companies start not making so much money, that they eventually, the labor market cycle follows that, and they stop hiring people. So I think we're supposed to expect earnings to be trending down over time from here. And so anything that tells me the opposite of that messes up my world, and we start thinking, goodness knows, how long can this cycle go on for? But I am looking for signs, for confirmation that, outside the sort of short-term noise, that this earnings cycle has rolled over, and that the economic cycle is rolling over with it, and that the U.S. economy is going to be growing, whatever happens this year, significantly slower next year.
Just quickly, only about 30 seconds left. Are we in a decoupling between the U.S. economy and the rest of the world?
I don't think so. I think the rest of the world is going to try to catch up, and you know, we all live on one planet. We're too tied up. The U.S. is on a massive outperforming period for a bunch of reasons, the negative elsewhere, but also, you know, the fiscal policy in the States made a huge difference to the U.S. economic cycle in the last 18 months. That's why the dollar's up here. That's why we get this relative performance. But I think we're more likely to re than decouple from here.
Kit Jukes, global fixed income strategist, Societe Generale. Thanks as always. Enjoy the weekend. S&P futures down 4.5 points now. Dow futures down 51 points. NASDAQ futures up 2 points. And you are listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. The program note, tune into the weekend edition of Bloomberg Daybreak, where we set you up for the coming week on Wall Street. Going to be a big one with the Fed meeting Wednesday. Listen in tomorrow at 5, again at 4 in the afternoon, Sunday mornings at 9 on Bloomberg Radio.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 99.1 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. We are seeing U.S. futures lower to close out a record-setting week on Wall Street. Shares of Intel are down more than 7% in early trading, the world's second-largest semiconductor maker, cutting its overall annual sales and earnings targets.
Amazon shares are up 1% as its focus on cloud computing continues to pay off. Selena Wang reports from our Bloomberg 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
First quarter profit came in at a record $3.6 billion. Sales were buoyed by solid performances from Amazon Web Services, digital advertising, and services for third-party sellers. But second quarter revenue forecasts fell short of expectations, signaling Amazon could be heading for another cycle of high spending. In San Francisco, I'm Selena Wang, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Selena, thank you. Shares of Ford are up almost 8%. Adjusted profit of 44 cents a share in the first quarter blew past analysts' average estimate of 26 cents.
ExxonMobil and Chevron lead more than a dozen companies reporting their earnings today. We get a preview from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
Bloomberg Intelligence says both companies likely benefited from the increase in crude oil prices. Analysts are looking for ExxonMobil to post an adjusted profit of 72 cents a share on revenue of more than $65 billion. Forecasts are for Chevron to post earnings of $1.30 a share on revenue topping $38.4 billion. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Jeff, thank you. In Europe, shares of Deutsche Bank are down more than 3%. The German bank cutting its target for full-year revenue after suffering its ninth straight quarter of contraction.
Royal Bank of Scotland shares are lower by 4%. Profit did beat estimates, but the bank warned that Brexit uncertainty will impact income in future months.
And on the economic front, we get U.S. government data on first quarter GDP at 10:30 a.m. Wall Street time. Economists forecast expansion at a 2.3% pace, while Bloomberg Economics calls for a more lackluster print of 1.9%. And just updating that time, that GDP number comes out at 8:30 a.m. Wall Street time. Ahead of that, futures are lower. As we said, S&P futures are down 4 points. Dow futures down 47. NASDAQ futures are up 3. The DAX in Germany is down about 0.1% right now. The CAC in Paris is down almost 0.2%. And the FTSE 100 is down 0.3%. 10-year Treasury up 4/32nds, yield 2.51%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.30%. NYMEX crude oil is down 1.3% or 84 cents at $64.38 a barrel. And COMEX gold is up 0.3% or $4 to $12.83.70 an ounce. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. It's 5:33 on Wall Street. We have Michael Barr here to tell us what's happening in the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. President Trump is calling himself the most transparent president. The president says he never stopped his staff from testifying before special counsel Robert Mueller's team. Trump appeared last night on Fox News as Hannity.
I was totally transparent. I didn't tell anybody you can't go in, and I could have. I could have said you're not going to testify. Nobody is going to testify. When I say it, they do what I say. I could have said that, but what happened, Sean, is I wanted to be totally transparent.
The president heads to Indianapolis today to speak before the National Rifle Association. Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden kicked off his run for the White House with a fundraiser last night in Philadelphia. Biden was also in Wilmington, Delaware, and was asked about being the Democrats' front runner.
It's real early. I tell you what, the issue is going to be who, not only who can win this, but who's the best person to lead the country. And that's what it's going to be all about. And it's going to be for the voters to decide that.
Next month, Biden will attend a Los Angeles fundraiser at the home of celebrity designer Michael Smith. Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report is providing fodder for the Federal Election Commission to probe possible campaign finance law abuses related to foreign interference. The commission's Democratic chairwoman, Ellen Weintraub, ordered staff attorneys to recommend enforcement action and policy changes based on the report. There is growing pressure on Baltimore's mayor to step down. Maryland Governor Larry Hogan backed calls for Catherine Pugh's resignation just hours after federal agents raided her homes and city hall offices. Attorney Steven Silverman is still insisting that Pugh's health is a big concern as her indefinite leave of absence continues.
She is out on leave because she had pneumonia, she has bronchitis, and she is under an incredible amount of stress, which makes it much more difficult for her to heal.
Investigators are trying to determine whether Pugh used bulk sales of self-published children's books to disguise kickbacks. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. It is 5:35 on Wall Street, and John Stashower has our Bloomberg NBC sports update.
Nathan, say what you want about Giants GM Dave Gettleman, and plenty of Giants fans aren't saying kind things today. He's not afraid to make bold moves. The trade of Odell Beckham and now the drafting of Duke quarterback Daniel Jones. Giants fans wanted a QB, but Jones was considered by most to be behind a couple of others and not worthy of being taken as high as sixth overall, yet he's the one to learn from Eli Manning and then replace him.
I think it's the responsibility of the rookie to do what he can to learn from the veteran. You know, I think it's certainly the opportunity of the young guy to make sure he's going out of his way to understand what has made a guy like Eli so successful for so long. So, you know, I'll certainly take that very seriously, and I look forward to getting up to him.
The feeling is Jones would have still been available with the 17th pick. Giants used that on Dexter Lawrence, third of three Clemson defensive linemen to go. They then sent second, fourth, and fifth round picks to Seattle to get the 30th pick to Georgia cornerback DeAndre Baker. The draft began as expected with Kyler Murray to Arizona. Two picks later, the Jets took Alabama defensive lineman Quinnen Williams. In Anaheim, Yankees led 4-0. RBI hits by DJ LeMahieu and Gleyber Torres. Gio Urshela with his first big league homer. But the Angels hit two-run shots in the fifth off Masahiro Tanaka. Two more runs in the sixth inning, three in the seventh. The Angels won 11-5 to end the Yanks' six-game winning streak. Start of round two, Stanley Cup playoffs, Boston and St. Louis both won 3-2 at home. Bruins in overtime over Columbus. Blues beat Dallas. San Antonio blew out Denver. That NBA series going to a Game 7. Hall of Famer John Havlicek, the Celtics' all-time leading scorer, has died at the age of 79. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashnever. Nathan?
Thanks, John. 5:37 on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now. The cover is on how Generation Z is changing the consumer landscape. Jim Ellis contributed to the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
They really are different. A lot of people have thought, well, you know, we've seen sort of these sort of demographic groups before. We talked a lot about boomers, about Gen X. And so everybody says, oh, this is just another. Well, it's different.
And you can read more about how it's different and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now. And listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio. Coming up to 5:38 on Wall Street, time now for the Tri-State Business Report from Bloomberg's John Tucker. Good morning, John.
And good morning, Nathan. Sources tell Bloomberg New York City's Housing Authority is considering a proposal to tear down two buildings in a public housing complex in Chelsea to build three mixed-income private developments. The plan would raise money for urgently needed repairs. The New York City Council has approved first-of-its-kind legislation that puts a limit on emissions from existing buildings starting in 2024. The legislation is part of the Climate Mobilization Act, which aims to reduce emissions from the city's largest buildings by 40% by 2030. And could New Jersey's quick growth in sports gambling mean it could surpass Nevada next year as the top sports betting market in the United States? at the Betting on Sports Conference this week. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy said his state may overtake Nevada as early as next year. And that is today's Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. Nathan.
All right, John, thank you. Coming up to 5:39 on Wall Street, Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on WHAS in Louisville. General Motors is adding 400 workers to its Corvette factory in Kentucky.
I'm Steve Podesk, and on KNX in Los Angeles, we're talking about how Barbie sales propped up Mattel's bottom line.
I'm Anna Edwards on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're following UK earnings after RBS sounded alarm bells over Brexit, and WPP warned of a downturn in the U.S.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and on WBBM in Chicago, we're watching for earnings from Archer Daniels Midland.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting Ford's turnaround is starting to gain traction as its latest earnings beat expectations.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Another story we're following, Uber, reportedly aiming for a valuation of about $80 to $90 billion in its IPO, just above its last private funding round. Bloomberg's learned the ride-hailing company is looking for $44 to $50 per share. The final details and pricing might still change. Uber is expected to set the terms for its IPO as soon as today. And President Trump and Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe plan to discuss how to deepen trade and economic ties in energy, digital connectivity, and infrastructure when they meet today at the White House. A source tells Bloomberg the meetings will include top trade and economic officials from both countries. The U.S. is pushing to reduce its trade deficit with Japan and gain better access to its agricultural market, while Japan is looking for a concrete promise that it won't be hit by possible auto tariffs. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And it's nearly 5:41 on Wall Street. Straight ahead, we check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our global platform for fast commentary and instant analysis on some of this morning's top news. This is Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks and U.S. stock index futures are nudging lower alongside Asian shares as earnings season continues. The dollar is steady before the release of first quarter growth data. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 3 points. Dow futures down 40. NASDAQ futures up about 9. The DAX in Germany, little change now. 10-year Treasury up 4/32, yield 2.51%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.30%. NYMEX crude oil is down 1.9%, down $1.25 to $63.96 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.3%, or $3.80, to $12.83.50 an ounce. The euro is at 1.1141 against the dollar, the yen at 111.71. Coming up today, we get the latest reading on U.S. GDP. For the first quarter, economists forecast the economy expanded at a 2.3% pace, while Bloomberg Economics calls for a more lackluster print of 1.9%. Bloomberg's Vinnie Del Giudice has more.
Bloomberg Economics says today's GDP report will reveal how the economy weathered a series of shocks, including the government shutdown and the stock market rout. Businesses are contending with bloated inventories, slower global growth, and zigzagging confidence in the economic outlook. Last year, the U.S. economy's growth rate peaked at a 4.2% pace during the second quarter, the strongest in 4 years. Vinnie Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinny, thank you. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, President Donald Trump and Vice President Mike Pence are scheduled today to speak to gun enthusiasts at the NRA. The group made a multi-million dollar investment in their campaign in 2016. Former Vice President Joe Biden closed out his first day as an official candidate, appearing at a fundraiser in Philadelphia last night. Round one of the NFL draft, quarterback Kyler Murray went number one to the Cardinals. The 49ers picked defensive end Nick Bosa second. Defensive tackle Quinnen Williams went third to the Jets. Defensive end Cleland Farrell went fourth to the Raiders. The Giants, with the sixth pick, selected quarterback Daniel Jones. QB Dwayne Haskins went 15th to the Redskins. Round two is tonight. Round two of the NHL playoffs, the Bruins won game one against the Blue Jackets. In baseball, the Yankees lost, the Red Sox were winners, And Celtics legend John Havlicek has died at age 79. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Yes, it is. Thank you, Michael. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, where it's 5:49 on Wall Street. Time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our platform offering informed perspectives on a range of global topics and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news. Bloomberg Opinion editor Jennifer Ryan here with us from our London Bureau with a look at Amazon's announcement yesterday that it's going to be taking two-day shipping for Prime customers to one day. And Sarah Halzack and Shira Ovide write this morning that this fixes a nagging problem for Amazon. What is it?
Well, I mean, we all know that Amazon Prime's membership gives you a lot of goodies. You can get discounts at Whole Foods. You can watch The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. But the original lure of the program, that which got millions of people shopping on Amazon as if they were on autopilot, was two-day shippings on millions of items at no additional cost. And so that one-two punch of value and speed was unmatched in retail. But lately, the membership program is starting to look less like a good deal.
Yeah, I guess because other retailers are offering two-day shipping of their own now.
Yeah, I mean, they have not only caught up, in some ways other retailers have undercut. Walmart and Target, for example, both offer, as you say, free two-day shipping on many of their goods with no membership fee. And some are even willing to sacrifice profit margin in order to grab digital sales. And this is threatening the entire Amazon consumer-facing ecosystem. So the thinking at Amazon is that one-day shipping is going to benefit not only Prime members, but potentially Amazon itself, as faster delivery is going to spur more people to buy goods online that they need immediately.
Now, presumably, getting shipping that quickly is not going to come cheap.
It will not. So there's an estimate that this will add $800 million in costs in the second quarter. I mean, the company spends about 12% of its sales, $30 billion in the last year, for sorting, transporting, and other shipping-related tasks. And so you can see how these are going to rise if quicker delivery turnaround spur more people to actually do their shopping on Amazon. And then the other thing to look at here is that this could potentially crimp the growing profit margins that investors have come to like about Amazon as a trade-off to suddenly mediocre revenue growth. But, you know, the authors of this piece say that if Amazon really wants to remain the king of online shopping, this is the kind of thing that it needs to be doing.
All right. Well, let's take a closer look at the broader global economy and on Johnny Trivedi's piece on why China won't pull up the rest of the world. I mean, we've been seeing a lot of positive signs now from the world's second largest economy. But Trivedi's saying maybe the recovery is not quite as sturdy as it seems in China.
I know, because we're all seeing what looked like an improvement. For instance, the growth numbers were up a little bit. And so, you know, this looked like it was going to be a pretty happy turnaround and a recovery. But Trivedi says you've got to look a little bit closer. So one example is to consider what's happening with makers of construction machinery. This is, she says, a really good measure of infrastructure investment and demand. So for domestic companies such as Zoomlion, there's strong sales and volume in the first quarter, expectations of profits to rise as well. But if you look at what's happening to foreign rivals such as Caterpillar, there's lackluster sales and warnings of a downbeat outlook and results.
So what explains the divergence?
Well, for one thing, the government's latest surge of stimulus has been targeted and engineered to spur domestic recovery. But really, Beijing's financially constrained. At, you know, some briefings with analysts in March, companies such as Hitachi said that there was concern about delayed payments from local governments and tight funding challenges. Trivedi also says that the stimulus package itself is underwhelming. I mean, of course, there's tax cuts, but this really isn't moving the needle because by most accounts, underlying demand is still pretty weak.
So what does Trivedi see China needing to do to actually lift the rest of the globe?
Well, for China's growth to be lasting, companies and households need to spend, and signs of corporate outlays are few and far between. So the tax cuts may optically help profits, but they're not going to shift a crisis of confidence. So what this has done is that China has kind of lost its ability to lift foreign economies that are nearby. An example here is South Korea. GDP there shrank the most in a decade. And, you know, that's partly a function of its sagging domestic economy, but its manufacturing and construction are typically lifted up by Chinese industrial man. That dropped as well. And so this gives you a picture of what the worry is for the region. And so Trivedi says until any of that changes, investors really need to get used to the idea that China will not be able to pull up the global economy along with it, because really it has far too many headaches at home.
All right, Bloomberg Opinion editor Jennifer Ryan, thank you as always. And you can read more on these and other stories from Bloomberg Opinion at Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg terminal. Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. It is 5:54 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report, brought to you by American Arbitration Association. Business disputes are inevitable. Resolve faster with the American Arbitration Association, the global leader in alternative dispute resolution for over 90 years. More at ADR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're following this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
The $5 billion Facebook has reserved to cover a possible settlement with the Federal Trade Commission may cover only part of the costs it potentially faces from privacy probes and litigation. A federal judge in Washington has issued a nationwide preliminary injunction blocking a Trump administration rule that prevents taxpayer-funded clinics from referring pregnant women to abortion providers. And 34 Michigan voting districts were ordered redrawn by a panel of federal judges that found most were gerrymandered to favor Republicans.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
Steve, thank you. Now, in other legal news we're watching this morning, Bayer now faces more than 1,300 lawsuits over its sales of Roundup weed killer, and parent company Monsanto has filed a brief in an effort to overturn a 2018 verdict awarding damages over claims that Roundup causes cancer. For more on this story, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to Cornell University law professor Robert Honkett.
Bob, in separate trials, juries found that Roundup caused the cancer of two California men and awarded massive damages, $80 million in one case and $289 million in another. Bayer says it's going to keep fighting these cases. What are the odds that it will fare any differently in future cases?
I think the odds are actually not very good for Bayer. I understand their sort of urge to be defiant maybe and try to, you know, take a confident stance. But I think this is probably maybe a bit foolhardy at this point. There are over 11,000 suits pending, as you know. All Bayer has to do is lose even two or three of those to face significant trouble. And the idea of, you know, defending all of them, particularly given how much evidence there seems to be out there that does indeed incriminate Roundup, notwithstanding the sort of contrary evidence that sort of cuts in the opposite direction, I think the better part of valor would probably be to settle these things as quickly as possible.
Bayer's CEO and management are going into Friday's annual meeting facing this backlash, with shareholders blaming the management for not foreseeing the legal risks associated with taking over Monsanto. The company says its executives reviewed the risks connected with Roundup diligently. Should it have foreseen this massive litigation?
It's hard for me to see how they wouldn't have foreseen at least the risk, right? You know, my understanding is that there's great disquiet among the shareholders for two reasons, right? One is, again, the acquisition of Monsanto in the first place. And then the second is the decision to go ahead and adopt this sort of defiant posture in the face of the litigation. I think that with respect to the first question of whether to buy Monsanto, I can't see how the risk would not have been foreseen.
And that's Cornell University law professor Robert Honkett speaking to Bloomberg's June Grasso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law, weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. And find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. Right now, S&P futures are down about 2 points. Dow futures down 33. And NASDAQ futures are higher, up 7.5. This is Bloomberg.